Lord, I'm in Krista Kosky.
Only, do we have any light here?
Yes, come up, seems to.
Huh? Bulbs are all gone?
Yes, I'm yours.
Oh, don't worry now, it's too late. It's just that, So today I was going to explain a little bit about Srimad Bhagavatam, which is one of our main scriptures. And the leading up to the reciting of Srimad Bhagavatam by Sudha Goswami is very pertinent, because the sages who were gathered together in Naimisharanya. Naimisharanya is a great forest in the north of where is that? North of UP is on the. I think it's in actually UP or border, but it's north of Delhi anyway, northeast. So Naimisharanya is considered a very holy place, and in that holy place many, many great sages and saints were gathered because they were in great anxiety. A saint or a holy person, a devotee, they don't have any anxiety. Why should they have anxiety? If Krishna is controlling, if God is controlling everything, why should they have anxiety? So they shouldn't have any anxiety. There's no need for anxiety. Anxiety comes when you think that you're the controller. That's when you get anxiety. When you think that you're controlling, then you think, if I don't do this, everything will go crazy. Or if I don't do that. That doesn't mean we're teaching an irresponsible philosophy, no. What we're saying is that everything is completely controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that within that wonderful arrangement of God, within that wonderful arrangement of God, there are so many different responsibilities. Let there be light. So that's a good example, actually. This is a very good example, because the sun is a big lamp, isn't it? But because the sun is sometimes not always there, especially in England, so there's also little lamps. So the little lamp is doing its little bit. So we are also, as small, tiny particles of God, we have to do our little bit. We can't do much. We are so tiny that our effect on nature is very tiny. Just like if you want to have an effect on the world, suppose you want to convince the world that they should stop drinking alcohol. You probably, if you were able to even convince 50 people in the street in your lifetime, you might be doing well, isn't it? In reality. So our influence on the world is very tiny. And that goes in every respect. We feel very confident that we're doing enormous things, but we're not. The reality is we are very tiny. As Krishna says in Mayavamsa Jivaloka, Jiva Bhuta, Sanatana, we are very Jiva Bhuta, we are small part and parcel of God. So Krishna is doing everything, and therefore the devotee is not worried. He shouldn't be in anxiety, the sadhu is not worried. But the one anxiety they have is that the stress or the adversity which is experienced by those who are suffering in the material world. This is an anxiety for a sadhu. Because a sadhu is always feeling compassion. As it says, Tatiksha Karunika. Tatiksha Karunika. A sadhu is very tolerant of his own inconveniences, but he cannot tolerate the inconvenience of others. Now this is a very elevated state of consciousness. We can't imitate it. Most people in this world are only concerned of their own interest. What is my interest in life? What will I get out of this world? What benefit shall I obtain by my activities. People are trying to get benefit in the economic sense. They want to get a better job, more money. They want to have a better house. They want to live in a better area, find a better school for their children, find a better bank that gives you more interest or get more money in the bank. Isn't it? These worries are flooding our mind day and night. And we also are thinking about how to find a nice wife if we're not married, or if we're married, how our wife is going to improve. The husband is thinking, this wife should improve herself. And the wife's thinking, this husband should improve. Everyone wants things to improve. But we understand that this consciousness is called selfish consciousness. If you study all the things you did in life, it wouldn't be difficult to at least ascertain that 99.9% were totally selfish. Practically. Now, selfishness is a very difficult word, because when you talk about selfishness, it conjures up ideas of greed and pilfering and stealing and people lusty activities. But selfishness is a very defined aspect in Vedic literature. It is called adiatmika. Atmika means the body, the mind, things which are related to the body and the mind. They're very, very important. But the difference with a sadhu or a devotee is that his relationship is different. The things which are important to Krishna, they're important to the devotee. And the things which are related to his body, they are taking secondary. They take secondary position. Now, it doesn't mean that they neglect their body. Hare Krishna, welcome. You're feeling better now? So Nitai Charanpur was being sick, he's better now. So, the consciousness, what we call in the material world, egocentric consciousness, egocentricity, which is centered around the body and the mind and the ego, particularly the ego, because ego is something not very well understood by anyone. But this egotism, egotistic desires, they are there in the material world. But when one becomes spiritually advanced, then one becomes Krishna-centered. That means God-centered, God-centered society. So the sages of Naimisharanya, they were actually congregated together in order to study the coming of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is coming. And Kali Yuga is the age when what is called the age of hypocrisy, the age of industry, economic development, the age of sense gratification, when there will be predominance of intoxication, meat eating, slaughter, gambling, illicit sex. There are four principles which society functions on. These are described in Vedic literature. One is mercy. There must be mercy. Human society must have mercy. Another one is cleanliness. Mercy, cleanliness, truthfulness, and austerity. They are the four legs of Dharma. Now, in Kali Yuga, those legs of Dharma become very much reduced. They're cut off. There's no more real cleanliness. We talk about cleanliness, of course, people think wash your hands. But that's not cleanliness. That's one aspect of cleanliness. Cleanliness means that you have a pure mind, clean. Your mind should be clean. Your heart should be clean. That's the first principle of cleanliness. The external cleanliness follows. Just like whatever your subtle body thinks, that's what your gross body does, isn't it? If you think I'm going to go shopping, then your body goes shopping, isn't it? It's not that the body says I'm going shopping and the mind says, oh, I'll follow you later. Is it? I'll see you down in Asda. So the first thing comes from the mind. But in modern society, that's not so much ascertained. Anyway, I haven't even started to talk, I was just leading up to it. So I have to say, Uma Jnana Timurandasya Jnanangana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Yina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manom Vishtam Shapitam Yinam Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svam Vedantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the sages of Namasranya could understand that in this age there will be a diminishing feature. The nature of the material world is that everything diminishes ultimately. Things start off very wonderful. Generally in the material world things start off nice. Then what happens is they stay for some time, produce some sort of effects, byproducts. Then they start to dwindle and gradually they vanish. So this is the nature of the material world, the influence of the gunas, the material energy, and ultimately things deteriorate. Just like summer is going to come, and gradually it will deteriorate, and then it'll become autumn and winter. So similarly, the nature of society is that it goes through different experiences, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. They are the four seasons of time. Of course, we are only experiencing when we're born. I might be born in 1952. Someone else was born in 1932. Well, they know what was going on in 1932. I don't, isn't it? At least they have more experience of 1938. Two is a bit early. They're just born. But at least after 8 years, they know more. So I wasn't there, or I can't remember. I was probably there, but I can't remember the different ages. Just like I can't even remember what I was doing this time last week. That doesn't mean I was doing nothing this time last week, does it? So these ages, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga, they are gradually starting off the golden age of Satya Yuga. Then as it becomes less, the silver age, the Treta Yuga, copper, Dwapara, and Iron Age Kali. So this Kali Yuga is the total degeneration of mankind, when this society, what we have, will degenerate. They will lose their cleanliness, their truthfulness, their austerity, their mercifulness. And these are characterized, the loss of mercy is characterized by animal killing. Maybe if the devotees by the door could move in and then people can come in easier. Hare Krishna. So the deterioration of mercy comes in the form of animal killing, meat eating, abortion, cruelty, wars, ethnic cleansing. These are all aspects of mercilessness. And not only in that sense, but also there is mercy towards others, kindness towards others, it becomes much, much less. Particularly cruelty is very prominent in this age. The cruelty. So lack of mercy, kindness, many qualities of mercy. And then that particular aspect is signified by meat eating. Cleanliness is signified by the effects of illicit sex and degradation, filthy living. Of course, one can't generalize, but there are many aspects of dirtiness, dirty living, dirty habits. The truthfulness, of course, degenerates on account of the difficulty people have with being truthful is because if you're truthful, you can't get on in this world, isn't it? People think that by telling lies, by cheating, then you can get on in this world. So this truthfulness is not there. And intoxication, there's intoxication mediated in gambling. So truthfulness, gambling is signified for truthfulness. Gambling, mediated in illicit sex, so intoxication. Now I'm getting lost. Intoxication, when there is intoxication, there's cleanliness, truthfulness, austerity. Intoxication, no austerity. One cannot perform austerity. So these things are there. Intoxication, meat eating, gambling, and illicit sex. So we'll read a little bit from the Bhagavatam here. Knowing well that this age of Kali has already begun, we are assembled here in this holy place to hear at great length the transcendental message of Godhead, and in this way perform sacrifice. We think that we have met your goodness by the will of Providence, just so that we may accept you as the captain of the ship. But those who desire to cross over the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. So this is very important to understand, that the nature of deterioration, the most important deterioration is the deterioration of qualities. You see, it's not just, when we talk about deterioration, people think, oh yeah, well, the quality of food nowadays is not that good. That's a deterioration. Or the economic structure in society, the Dow Jones index is down, or the gross national production is down. They see that as deterioration. But that is a gross materialistic concept of life. What is actually the deterioration is the deterioration in quality. And the most important quality is the quality within the human being. What is the quality of the human being? Just like someone may put on a nice suit and have lots of money and credit cards and big car, but they may be like an animal. We've seen it. There are many examples of even rulers of a country who are like animals. They're totally devoid of mercy or cleanliness or truthfulness, kindness or gentleness or tolerance. They're just like big animals. So therefore, as it says here, Kali Yuga is very dangerous for the human being, because in this age, there is a great deterioration of qualities. So it goes on to explain that the sages of Namisharanya are trying to understand that what is the process of sacrifice which will give the ultimate benefit, the ultimate benefit for all human beings. Everyone in this world is looking for benefit, isn't it? Some people are going for the social security benefit. Some people are going for their economic benefit in the marketplace. Some people are going for their food benefit, stomach benefit, isn't it? Or they're going for their tongue benefit, drinking alcohol, sex benefit. We all want some benefit. We want to benefit from the material world, because that is the nature of material consciousness, that we want to... We want to gain something from our existence or our stay in the material world. We want to gain something. I want to gain something. We don't want to lose anything. No one's going around throwing money away in the street. Have you ever walked down the street and there's someone emptying his pockets out? Oh, this stuff is taking so much room in my pocket and throwing out. No. Generally, you'll find that people are trying to stuff it in their pocket. In the same way, no one is going around distributing all their wealth. That's very rare. You find a few people who distribute their wealth. Most people try to accumulate wealth. So if we study psychology, we see that generally the emphasis is always, how can I benefit? So in the material world, the material energy, we feel that it's there for our benefit, isn't it? We feel that it's there for our benefit. I don't care whether you benefit from it, as long as I benefit. Now, whether you benefit or not, well, that's your tough luck. You know, that's entirely your good fortune. But what's very important is that I benefit from it. And you're the person, everyone is thinking like that. They're thinking, I must benefit. Everybody wants a benefit. You don't do anything without some benefit. Whether you want to look at it in an individual way or a social way or a collective way. Why do businessmen get together and form the Chamber of Commerce? Not because they've got nothing better to do and they want to all waste their time. They come together because they all want to benefit from each other, isn't it? They have socialism is a collective benefit for society. Communism is, again, a collective benefit where the state will provide benefit for everyone. Of course, what they found out was that people who are running the state... They're more interested in themselves than the state, so they generally make sure that they get the first bite of the apple. And capitalism, of course, which we live in, is the capital gain, that there's a certain amount of capital and that everyone should try and grab it. So therefore we have in the Constitution of America that everyone has the right to pursue happiness. Of course, their idea of happiness is to try and benefit as much as you can in the new world, as they used to call it. So this idea of getting benefit from the material world is a very deep-rooted consciousness, and it is actually the nature of the material world is that one of exploitation. So the sages of Namasharanya are aware that in Kali Yuga everyone will try to be chasing after material benefit. So therefore they ask Sukadeva Goswami, what is the real benefit? What is that thing which can give the utmost benefit? Because it's true, without benefit, you come into this world empty-handed, isn't it? Everyone came in here with nothing. Did anyone bring anything when they came here? Did you bring something from the past life? Or did you bring any money that you had hidden under your... Exactly, you brought some karma. But nothing visible was brought. So you bring nothing. So therefore, obviously, when you come in empty-handed, then... you automatically, from the moment you're born, you need something. You need the mother's milk, isn't it? Straight away. So you have to fill your belly. You need something. So the general nature of this world is always there is inadequacy. There's always inadequacy. And therefore, we have to find out what is the adequate situation. What will make us adequately happy, adequately fulfilled. And of course, everyone has millions of theories about how they will become adequate. Generally, we understand we are all inadequate. We all know that. I mean, we can lie and cheat and pretend. If I say, who's perfect in this room? Is anyone here perfect, by the way, just in case anyone did? Actually, So we know that somehow or other I'm not perfect. But we say that's natural. It's natural not to be perfect. Which is actually a load of rubbish, because who said it's natural to be imperfect? It's actually very unnatural to be imperfect. But in the material world, the idea of perfection is relative to our material concept. What we call perfect is someone who's got a good wife, a good family, a good house, a good society, lives in a good neighborhood, and has a good prospect in life. So we have all these different ideas. These are called conditional ideas. They are conditional concepts. But they're not reality. When we say that it's natural to be imperfect, what we really mean is that there's no hope of being perfect. And therefore we can say, well, it can get better. Things are going to get better. So the sages of Namasharanya were actually thinking of the ultimate benefit. There are two types of benefit. One is called prayas and one is called srayas. Prayas means that immediate benefit which is given to the body and the mind. There's immediate things that you need. Like it's very nice to talk about Vaikuntha and Goloka and Krishna and Radha. But if you're hungry, that's more important actually. If you're hungry, really hungry, then you won't be able to sit there and listen. You'll think, oh, I've got to eat. Hurry up, this guy's... Hurry up, shut up, so I can get some food. Like that. So you'll think in your mind that I'm hungry. Because that is called prayas. Immediate benefit is needed. There's an immediate requirement in life. Now these immediate requirements are there in every species. Animals also, they immediately need things. They need water, they need grass, they need a place to sleep. They need different things. We also need so many things. We need these things. But are they the ultimate benefit? This is the question. In other words, if I eat a big meal in a restaurant, is that the ultimate benefit of life? Is that the perfection of my existence? So then, if we study, we have to find out what is actual the ultimate benefit. So one theory, of course, materialistic theory, is that the ultimate benefit is to have certain material things. In other words, to have a nice material condition, that is the ultimate benefit of life. And all this gobbledygook about some spiritual realm and place where you all have nice things going on is really just a figment of the imagination. That is the way materialists view things, and they consider the spiritualists to be living in a sort of cuckoo world where they have this make-believe phantasmagoria, the castle in the sky. And so their argument is that you people are looking for something because you're dissatisfied. You're not satisfied, that's why you're chasing after the will-o'-the-wisp, why you're chasing after some idea. So, therefore, for the materialist, the idea of ultimate benefit does not come into existence. That's why a materialist, Prabhupada calls them a polished animal. They're a polished animal. They're animal. Animal means, what is the nature of an animal? Animals do exactly the same as human beings. There's only a slight difference in sophistication. So that's the word polished. Sophisticated animal. In other words, when we engage in eating, we have a nice plate, we cook the food, we have some nice utensils, we add a bit of spices and salts and delicacies and food from Arabia and Bali and China and India. We import things, we fly things in from all over the world. We have, there was one rich man, he would fly in vegetables for his, or meat from a certain part of the world just for his breakfast. There was one guy, the Sultan of Brunei, when he wanted marmalade, he'd send a plane to Scotland and bring it back, pot of marmalade for breakfast, because he liked a certain Scottish marmalade, and if it wasn't there, he would send his aeroplane to go and get it. So that's sophisticated. But the business is the same. The business is eating, and the animals are eating, and the business is the same whether we're maintaining ourselves, the animals maintaining themselves. We're sleeping, the animal's sleeping, we're having sex, the animal's having sex. So all of these things are very natural. So these natural benefits, they are polished animalism. So therefore, the Vedic literature says, atata brahman jignasya. Atata brahman jignasya means, atata means now that you have reached this human form of life, brahman jignasya. What is the meaning of Brahma Jignasya? Brahma Jignasya means now is the time to become acquainted with Brahman. To become acquainted with Brahman, to understand Brahman. Now what is Brahman? Brahman means God, basically. That the Supreme Personality of God, Parabrahma. Parabrahman means the Supreme Brahman. So within Brahman, Brahman means the spiritual energy of God. Now in the human form of life, there is opportunity to understand Brahman. And therefore, human form of life is a very important opportunity. Therefore, it says that the human being has four different functions, what we call dharma, religiosity, artha, economic development, dharma, artha, kama, which is sense gratification, and moksha, liberation. They are basically how the entire system works. Everyone is very well acquainted with the immediate benefit of economic development and sense gratification. The other two, dharma and moksha, are related with one's elevated consciousness. Anyone who's intelligent can understand that I don't belong in this material world, that the material environment that I'm living in is not my real position. In other words, that it requires a development of intelligence. So this development of intelligence is the search for truth, the search for God. So therefore, the sages of Namisharanya are asking Suta Goswami that what do you feel? Because Suta Goswami was there when Parikshit Maharaj heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami is the son of Vyasadeva and was a Paramahansa of the highest order. He was a completely self-realized soul. So therefore, whatever Sukadeva Goswami spoke comes from the spiritual world. It's not from the material world. Sukadeva Goswami had no interest in prayas, in the immediate benefit. He didn't. He was walking naked. He was an avidut, means totally renounced. He had no possessions, he had no family, no place to live. He had no interest in the material world. But spiritually, he was most qualified because he was an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he was full of all transcendental knowledge. So Suta Goswami heard that knowledge from Sukadeva Goswami, and therefore the sages of Namasharanya were very anxious to hear the same knowledge from Suta Goswami. So they are saying that, my dear Suta, being blessed with many years and having heard this transcendental knowledge from Sukadeva Goswami, can you please answer our questions? So the question is that the question, let us offer my respectful obeisances on the hymn Sukha, the spiritual masters of all the sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggled to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement of the cream of Vedic knowledge after personally assimilating it by experience. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, this is important to understand, one should first offer one's obeisances unto the personality of God of Narayana, unto Narayana Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Then it says, O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna, and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the soul. So this is the point, that the questions, everyone is asking, because we're always ignorant. The reason we question is because we're ignorant. Basically because we're very tiny. Anyone who's very tiny, like if you notice children, they ask too many questions, isn't it? Because they're very small. When they're about 4 or 5 years of age, they're sitting on trains, they're going, Daddy, what's that? And then Daddy goes, what? And then he goes, that over there, Daddy, what's that? And by the time they point to it, it's already gone. But anyway, then they say, then a minute later, Daddy, what's that over there? What's that man doing over there? So then, Mommy, did you see this? What's that? So they're questioning because they haven't actually had experience. So question, what is the reason behind question? And it's because of lack of experience. They don't have experience of that thing, therefore they question that thing. This is intelligence, isn't it? If you don't have experience of something, just like if I want to give a lecture quantum mechanics. I'm going to give a lecture on quantum mechanics, but I have no experience of quantum mechanics. So I would probably sit here just waffling for ages and trying to make it sound interesting, but I wouldn't have any knowledge of it. So therefore, I have to question. If I'm going to give a talk on quantum mechanics, I'd have to read up on it and study it and get to know all the intricacies of it and then maybe say something. So generally, this world, the nature of the material world is inadequate experience. Because of that inadequate experience of life, we question. This nature of question is very important. So therefore, questioning is one side, but the other side is you must get the right answer. So the person you ask must be qualified to speak. Just like if you want to ask about quantum mechanics and you ask someone who's cleaning toilets in a railway station, you might not get the perfect answers because that person may not be qualified. They might be able to tell you everything about how to clean toilets, isn't it? Including what type of brasso to use and what type of, the stuff you put in toilets?
Bleach.
What's the best bleach? So they have their area of experiencing, what we call experience and jurisdiction. The material world means experience and jurisdiction. We are all confined within an experience and jurisdiction, and we always want to expand that jurisdiction because knowledge gives us expanded experience. That means that with just like now, we can sit in a nice comfortable seat and go to India. Before, you would have to go in a boat. And before there was boats, you'd probably have to swim. So therefore, these conveniences are all different types of knowledge. That's why the more knowledge we gain in society, the more we start creating all these gizmos and gadgets and things that now they have electronic toothpaste and toothbrushes, and you just hold your hand there and it does everything. Before you had to move your hand, now you don't have to move your hand. So because now they've discovered that they can, that rubbing of the hand up and down, they can do it with a machine. So that's called advancement. So many different techniques, technical knowledge to utilize matter in various shapes and forms. So that experience of the material world does not give benefit to the soul. It gives benefit to the body. But for those who are actually serious about crossing over the ocean of material existence, then they have to make a different type of inquiry, a different type of search for experience. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tadbiri paripatena paripashena sevaya upatekshanti te jnana janina tatpadarshana, that one should try to learn the truth. Because again, in order to know truth, one has to approach a higher authority. One should try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. So Krishna says, but there are two qualifications very important. What is that? Paripashena sevaya. Paripashena sevaya means that one should approach the supreme, the spiritual master in a humble state of mind, and also with the desire to render service. Now, why render service? I mean, just to inquire is enough, isn't it? You can just say, I wanted to ask some questions, but I didn't want to do any service. I mean, that's, you know, the service. I mean, the questions are for my gain, but what's the service got to do with it, isn't it? Just like if you came here now and I said, okay, you've had the lecture, now everyone's got to rebuild the building and redecorate it and do this and that because you had a lecture. You turn and say, well, I didn't come to do that. I came just here and have a bit of a shot and go home. And now this sadhu here is suddenly he's coming up with all these new ideas that I didn't never heard about service. Now, why is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, why has he brought up this issue about service? It's a good point, isn't it? I mean, he could say, just try to learn the truth, approach a spiritual master, and when you've gotten everything firm, just say goodbye and off you go. Because what is the meaning of service? Sevaya. Sevaya is very important because the reason we're in the material world is because we don't want to serve Krishna. That's why we're here. The only disqualification for our not knowing our spiritual identity is because we don't want to do any service. People want to do service when there's benefit. In other words, when I get a job and I do my service, then there's a benefit there. I get my wage packet, I get a nice holiday in Gibraltar, and I have my nice groceries for Mazdas, and I get a nice car, and sure, I don't mind working 40, 50, 60 hours a week. It's great as long as I get the benefit. So the point is that the service in the material world is always done for prayas. Immediate benefit. You see, this is the point you have to study. In a material world, we always do service as long as it's got an immediate benefit. Now, Krishna is talking about a different type of service because Guru is not interested or shouldn't be interested in his own benefit. The Guru is not there to discourse and then say, okay, that'll be £5.50 each and you can owe the rest. No, he's not there. That's not his business. Guru means servant. So Guru has to be the greatest servant. Hare Krishna. Paresh, how are you?
All right.
Good. And Josh, Hare Krishna. So the Guru, what is the nature of Guru? Is that the Guru is the greatest servant. That's all. Guru means one who is the greatest servant. It doesn't mean he has to have a big beard and he's sitting in a top of a rock in the Himalayas and he's got icicles on his head. and he hasn't washed for 50 years. That's not the idea of guru. Guru means one who is the greatest servant, or at least a very dear servant. So one has to study guru. Many people think guru should be someone who has got a very big charismatic nature, and whenever he speaks, the whole world thunders and all of these demigods come down to touch his feet. That's not guru. Guru means one who is a very dear servant to Krishna. So a servant, in the material world, servants are not much looked upon, are they? If you're doing nice service, people see you as a fool. Because the nature of the world is to be a dominator. Everybody in this world wants to be a dominator. Being a servant is not a very good position. That's why even when you're in a temple and there's a devotee always cleaning the floors, and no one cares about it. But when the sannyasi comes, Trindandi, Paramahansa, Paramakacharya, big servant has come. But that's not necessarily the case, because the service is actually done with the quality of service. So therefore one may be a very big dear servant of Krishna be a sannyasi, or one may be a very big servant of Krishna be a toilet cleaner. The exchange of service between Krishna and his devotee is a confidential issue. It's a confidential issue between God and his devotee. You cannot say this person's a big servant and that's not. Then that means you're God. Because the service is not being rendered to you, it's being rendered to God. Therefore, he's the one who ascertains, this is my dear servant and this is not so dear. That's up to Krishna. So therefore, generally, the principle of service to Krishna should be understood, that once one is engaged in the service of Krishna, then Krishna says he is under my protection. He is my devotee. He says, sarvadhamam pratyaja mamekam sharanam praja hangtang sarvapabhebhyo mukshishami masucha. That verse should be studied very carefully. Krishna says, give up all your varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. And what is the return of that? I will give you protection. As soon as you surrender to Krishna, you are protected. As long as you are in the service of Krishna, you are protected by Krishna. And one who is protected by Krishna cannot be actually defeated by anything. So therefore, one who is guru means actually one who is the dear servant of Krishna. And there, one should approach spiritual master. It's not a singular thing, it's also a plural thing. There are many very dear servants of Krishna, and therefore one should serve the Vaishnavas, one should serve the devotees. Why? Because one should not feel that one is qualified to directly serve God. If you think you can directly approach God, then it's not service. You see, it's not service. To try to directly approach God means that one is in the mood of exploitation. Let me ask you a question. Why would you want God? Why would anyone want God? There's only one reason, because he's got something that you haven't. No other reason. If God was less than you, you wouldn't care a damn about it. You wouldn't even want to hear him, isn't it? If God was someone who worked for the British Telecom as a cleaner of the offices, you wouldn't have a crumb of interest in him. The only reason we have an interest in God is because he can provide us something that we haven't got. In other words, we're inadequate and he's adequate, and therefore we want to know about him. Quick! Get him here right away and bring his checkbook. I need this guy. I need to find out. I heard he's got loads of jewels. And he lives in a beautiful planet with all nice, wonderful things. And I can dance around and be happy and eat lots of gulabjamuns. So therefore, if you try to approach God, then you have to purify the heart of the materialistic propensities. That's why Krishna says one has to approach the spiritual master in service. And paripashena means in a complete blank state. like blank check. Now one may say, why should I go to God blank? Surely I should bring along all the stuff that I've got with me. But blank doesn't mean stupid or ignorant or unintelligent. Blankness means that in a clear, crystal clear mind, one should approach God crystal clear. In other words, there's no material contamination. So to purify the heart, of course, that's not very easy. To have a crystal clear, pure mind is a very difficult thing, isn't it? So to purify the mind, to purify the heart, therefore one has to engage himself in menial service to Krishna. And the more menial that service is, actually, the more purifying it is. Many people think to serve God that I should be the president of America. No. To serve God, Krishna says patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakti priyadi. You can simply offer even a flower, a leaf, some fruit, vegetables, and things like that. There's no... So that is what yome bhakti priyadi, that you must have devotion. So that devotion comes from realization, from establishing one's relationship with Krishna. So therefore, the Sudha Goswami says that the Sarvai Pamsam Paro Dharmo, that the supreme occupational dharma for all humanity is by that which man can attain to loving devotional service. You see, this is his conclusion. Now, this is the answer to all the sages. The whole Srimad Bhagavatam is an expansion of this verse, if you like. That one must attain to loving devotional service on the transcendental Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So, as Prabhupada says here, that the question of the sages to... Sudha Goswami is, what is the supreme benefit? Not the prayas, but srayas, the ultimate benefit from all human society, for all the creatures of this world, for everything on this planet, is to engage in transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord. So in other words, Krishna consciousness is very simple. It simply means that one should pursue the occupation of serving Krishna 24 hours a day. But that service must be ohaitaki apratiyata. Now here the word ohaitaki means causeless. Causeless devotional service. In the material world, is the plane of cause and effect. Everything here has causation. Everything is cause. And therefore it is an effect. In the spiritual world, the only cause is Krishna. You see? So what does causeless means? It means Krishna consciousness. Causeless, because in the spiritual world everything is there to give pleasure to Krishna. Nothing has a separate existence than to give pleasure to one supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna. He is the autocratic supreme individual who is the enjoyer of every single thing within his creation. And you are created to serve him. Now one may say, hey, hang on a minute, now that's a big position he's got. Why is he getting everything? I mean, surely he can share a bit out with me. Why does he have to have it all, 100%? That is called envy of God. You see, that exact thought is why we're in the material world. It is called enviousness of the position of God. So therefore, when we call causeless devotional service means where there is no material contamination, no material effect. Material effect means that I have a separate interest, a separate desire than this pure 100% satisfaction of Krishna. Now that is a very high plane. It is not something one can artificially come to or pretend. But it is the actual plane where we belong. That is called the spiritual plane. So therefore, this is the point that Sutta Goswami is making, that the ultimate benefit for all society is that they must come to this plane, this platform. So therefore, how to achieve that? That is what Vedic culture is all about. The whole structure of society, the different varnas, the ashrams, the different interactions of society, the social systems, the itihasis, the histories, the Puranas, the Vedic literature. It is all to bring one to that plane of unalloyed devotional service to Krishna. So therefore, there's a problem, because in Kali Yuga, Vedic culture does not exist. There's no varnas, there's no ashrams, there's no discourses going on very much. Mostly there's very little spiritual things going on, so there's a big problem, isn't it? So therefore, Sudha Goswami was also very aware of this. And he explains, what is that? I'll read you the verse here. Of best amongst the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed of one's own occupation, according to caste divisions and orders of life, is what? Haritoshana. To please the personality of Godhead. That is the key secret of purifying one's entire material existence. In the material world, we want to please ourselves. We want to please our brother. We want to please our sister. We want to please our family. We want to please our government. We want to please the neighbor, the cat. We want to please everyone, isn't it? But that does not bring us an ultimate benefit. It brings us a material benefit. It's not that it shouldn't be done. It's not that it should be neglected. But it is not the ultimate benefit. The ultimate benefit is to please the super soul, Krishna, within the heart. And then, how do we do that? Therefore, with one-pointed attention, tasmat ekana manasa. Now, Krishna says the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? What does he say? Ekahe kuru nandana. Isn't it? Ekahe kuru nandana. So here the word ekana. Ekana means by one. Ekahe kuru means by one-minded. So here, therefore, with one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of devotees. With sword in hand, intelligent men should cut through the binding knots of reactionary work karma by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to this message? Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of all truthful devotees, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya comes as the conclusion of this, and Lord Chaitanya comes to show that in this Kali Yuga there should be constant kirtana, constant chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and constant recitation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and various Vedic literatures. Because from that chanting, then a very powerful thing happens. What is that thing? Sound goes in the air. Now, what is the nature of sound? Sound is very, very powerful. Just like if I say to someone, you are a fool. What does it cause? Anger, isn't it? Immediately. You calling me a fool? Who do you think you are? And then the person says, you're not just a fool, you're an idiot. So that's the way things go on. So sound goes into the heart. You see? It goes right into the heart. Much more than many other things. You can go straight into someone's heart with sound. You can practically kill them with sound. There are many people who jump off bridges because a girlfriend says, I reject you. Isn't there? How many people have committed suicide because their girlfriend told them, I don't love you anymore. Go away. So that one sentence, their life is finished. Why? Because sound goes into the heart and it can penetrate all material covering. In the Christian Bible they also say, in the beginning was sound and the sound was God, the sound was of God. What does that mean? Absolute sound. Just like in the material world, we see how the whole fabric of society is based on sound, the quality of sound. When people meet, they immediately start chattering, isn't it? Chat, 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 chat. There, and then they're there. Everything is based on that. So therefore, the sound quality, that is the difference, that Sukadeva Goswami passes the sound on to Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami has again passed the sound on to the sages of Namasharanya, and we have been very mercifully benedicted by being given the sound from Srila Prabhupada. That is the business of Guru, to deliver the sound intact. You see? Try and understand this point. If you are delivering the sound intact, then you are Guru. Lord Chaitanya said, on my order, you become Guru. Deliver this world. Now, one may question, but I'm not qualified. But why should you bring that into issue when you're qualified? Because are you the one delivering the sound? Or is the sound what you're delivering? Try and understand that. Are you delivering, or is the sound what you're delivering? You are not creating the sound to deliver. Just like a postman. If he has a million pound check from the lottery, it's not that he created the million pounds and then has to deliver it. Suppose the lottery, when the postman comes, says, look, you've got to go out and collect £1 million. And when you finish collecting it, can you take it over to that guy who won the lottery last Wednesday? No, that's not his business. The peon or the postman, he is not the creator of what he's delivering. He is the deliverer. And his only business is to deliver without interruption. Without, in other words, to become a transparent media of the post office. A postman is a transparent media for the post office. He has to act on behalf of the government, the post office. Therefore, they call it Her Royal Majesty's Postal Service, isn't it? Because it's the Royal Majesty, the Queen, who's the head of the post office. And therefore, it has what is called royal protection. If you open a letter, you can be put into prison. It's against law to interfere with people's mail. Why? Because whatever is in that letter is a confidential thing. But it doesn't mean that the person delivering it is part of what's in the letter. In that sense, and I'm giving an example, that he must, obviously, this is a crude example, so on the spiritual level, Lord Chaitanya is saying, on my order, you become deliverer of this message. In other words, you speak this message, you distribute this knowledge, and in that way become guru, deliver this land. So that doesn't mean that everyone is a Mahabhagavat pure devotee, or that everyone's Suta Goswami or Sukadeva Goswami, or that we're Vyasadeva. What it means is that if one is 100% surrendered to the order of Vyasadeva, to the order of Suta Goswami, to the order of the Parampara, to the order of the spiritual master, then one is acting as spiritual master. And therefore that is called the three things that we follow in our line is Guru, Shastra, Sadhu. They're all intrinsically linked. Prabhupada said there are three. On a normal train you have two tracks, but we have three tracks. That means it's very solid. Three tracks. All of them are going back to God. So therefore Krishna gives this order, because Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, that you deliver this land by propagating this message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, the duty of the ISKCON movement is to propagate, to preach this transcendental message, and the responsibility of society is to simply hear and to follow. So everyone has to implement this knowledge, implement this philosophy, and then there is perfect bond, because nobody can make any spiritual advancement without the grace of Krishna. It is not dependent on any human being. It is not dependent on anything of this material world. Transcendental knowledge has nothing to do with the mundane plane. If you look in the example of Bilbamangal Thakur, his guru was a prostitute. She was a prostitute because he was going for illicit sex to this woman. And one day she said, oh, why are you bothering so much coming when there's a storm? when there's floods, when there's lightning, when there's snakes chasing you, you come to me for what? For some material benefit. Why don't you go to Vrindavan? And if you had the same energy to capture Krishna, you would become a great transcendentalist. So he heard that. Just like the same way that that person commits suicide when they heard the harsh words from their girlfriend. So similarly, he heard properly, it went into his heart. He later on became probably one of the greatest Vaishnavas in our line. Even Lord Chaitanya would listen to his poetry. He was one of the few poets that Lord Chaitanya would listen to constantly and go into deep ecstasy. Jayadeva was another one. So the point is that this transcendental knowledge has nothing to do with the material world. One should not try to see it from a material angle. It comes directly. It coming from what? It comes from the Supreme Personality of God. He is the one delivering everything. And Guru means one who acts on his behalf. That means the greatest servant. When we asked Prabhupada one time, how will we know who's a guru? Prabhupada said, find out someone who is mad after Krishna. Mad after Krishna's service. You see, mad means intoxicated with that service attitude. He didn't say find someone who's got big beard and sits in the Himalayas and looks very good. Those are the one who is the greatest servant. So that's one point. So we finish here. Therefore, this with one point of attention, one should constantly hear. That is the nature of our Krishna conscious movement, to give opportunity for people to hear. And then what happens when you hear? Then it says here, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, the Super Soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtues when properly heard and chanted. You see, this is the system, transcendental system. Krishna's in the heart. He's the one that purifies the heart. Tesham sarada yuktanam bhajata pratipurvakam didami puriyogam tam. We should develop the relationship with Krishna in our heart. That is what Krishna consciousness is about. Linking with the super soul within our heart. We don't have to go billions of miles to find God. God is as near to us as our jugular vein. But we are looking externally everywhere. We are thinking that God may be hiding up in the Himalayas or he may be hiding somewhere. No, he's in our heart. He's situated in the heart. And he says in the Bhagavad Gita, if you approach me, yeyamam prapadyante, as you approach me, I reciprocate. So how do you approach God? Through transcendental sound. That is the medium. Just like when you want your mom when you were a kid, you said, mom, mom, isn't it? You didn't need to have a PhD in mathematics or you didn't need to be a doctor. You just said, mom. But because you said it with complete dependency, mom always would come. Rushing. Mom comes rushing, isn't it? So the point is that affection bond is there, so that shelter is there. So similarly, when you want to get Krishna, you have to chant with deep